Two, I don't have to bill people. Like, they're going to go on coin hops, flat monthly, automatic payment. And then once they're on, they just, payments will come out automatically every month until they leave lessons. You know, there's no changes. There's no like, stopping and starting payments or collecting, you know, registration fees anymore.
Yes, it's so great. In fact, like, I got goosebumps when you said that. I'm such a nerd because it's so, I love the feeling of just flat monthly payment that's automatic. I don't have to think about it. They don't have to think about it. It's all year round. Welcome to the Piano Sensei Way. I am your host, Clinton Pratt, and I'm here to help you master the art of running a successful piano teaching studio. I'm super excited to have Amy Chaplin with us today. And welcome, Amy. Tell us first, where do you live?
I am located in Bluffton, Indiana, which is a small town of about 10,000 in northeast Indiana, around 30 minutes south of Fort Wayne, and maybe an hour and a half northeast of Indianapolis for a little better reference point.
Yeah, okay, so we're not too far from each other. I'm in Cincinnati. A little bit of history just to tell the audience. Me and Amy go way back to the 1900s. Sometime in the 1900s.
We were
in a, I don't know, what do you call that? We were in like a traveling music
singing
team.
Group? Music group, yeah. Well, you didn't sing, you played the piano, but I sang.
Yeah, so we were in high school, but we went to a college and practiced and then went on the road for a week and traveled around. Anyway, that was long ago. And then we ran into each other at Ohio Music Teachers Conference. I forget, a handful of years ago.
Like 2016 or something like that, maybe. Yeah. I feel like it was at Kent State. And I was like, I think you were sitting in front of me and I kept looking at you going, I know this guy. How do I know him? I can't remember how it clicked because it had been so long, you know. Right. And I mean, we only knew each other for what, a couple of weeks? And I don't know if we were like, if we did it for multiple weeks or if it was just 1 year. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was just once. But yeah, I thought the same thing. Or maybe I saw you looking at me like, who is that? I think she looks familiar, but she's giving me looks. And then, we figured it out like, oh my gosh, we were in Solid Rock together.
Small world.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Well, I mean, we weren't even in the same high school, you know, like it was just a random like summer event, you know, for high school kids. And I'm like 3 hours from Cincinnati. So it was a bit of a haul for me to go, you know, down there. So,
yeah. And tell us what you teach and who you teach.
Yeah, I'm completely 100% piano teacher. I actually started originally my career in choral education, but I kind of completely left that and I don't even teach voice lessons. I just do piano. I dabbled in a little bit of ukulele lessons, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later. But I have about 21 piano students. I teach all ages. Right now I have from age 5 through adults. And at the moment it's all private lessons.
Yeah. Okay. And what does your studio look like as far as the location? Like, is it a home studio? Is it a commercial space?
Yeah. I actually am out of my home. We built a home and intentionally designed the studio space in the basement of our home. We built that in around 2018, moved the studio in fall of 2019. I do all 40-minute private lessons. I do group classes about every 6 weeks in lieu of the lesson, and they're 75-minute group classes. Although this coming year, that's actually going to change, which is an evolution, which we're going to talk about today. But I've been doing that format for 14 years where they have a lesson in lieu of the group of, a group class in lieu of the lesson about every 6 weeks. I don't do any like summer camps or anything like that. I do lessons in the summer. I've dabbled in camps in the past, but it's not my thing exactly. It's just me. I don't have any teachers working with me or anything. And it's great being able to work from home. I love it.
Yeah, well, that's great that you could also keep the studio in your mind as far as the space when you're, you know, deciding on where to live or build your house or whatever. You know, that's very smart.
Yeah, it was kind of fun that you actually get that choice, you know, mm-hmm. to like how you want it designed. I mean, we didn't really design the shape of the room a certain way or anything, but, mm-hmm. you know, we had talked initially about, oh, it could go over the garage, or some of that was just, it was going to be too big to try to put it over the garage. So we moved it to the basement and said, well, if I'm working in a basement, I need light. So as you can see, there's a big window right here next to me. You almost don't even know that you're in a basement. And the layout of our property works really well because it's kind of sloped at the front. And so the business windows for the basement are at the front of the house. So it works perfectly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks great. It looks bright and homey and cozy and everything. And yeah, just to remind the listeners, if you're listening to the podcast, we have the video version on YouTube so that you can see our lovely faces and spaces and whatever else we have going on visually. Yeah, but I'm really excited about you, Amy, because you're an amazing presenter. I've seen you at conferences, and I even saw you do a recent presentation on how to give a presentation.
I know, it's kind of a fun topic.
Yeah, that was really good. And you have a podcast, too. That's what? How many episodes do you have now?
I think this week it was 118, or tomorrow was 119. Oh. Yeah. So it's a weekly podcast, and that's just a fun, you know, outlet as you're experiencing now, besides our teaching. So,
right. Yeah. I'm depending on what episode this one is, I'm about 20 right now, but yeah, yours is really good too. And really fun. And
thank you.
Yeah. You just have so many ideas. So one of the things when I knew I wanted to have you on, but then we're like, okay, well, what do we want to talk about? Cause I'm sure you have all kinds of things. But we're talking about the way to evolve your studio.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's get into it. What are some of the ways you've evolved your studio? Do you want to list a few or go into detail or whatever you want to do?
Yeah, let's do it. I do enjoy talking about this topic quite a bit. So interestingly enough, I initially opened my studio back in 2011, and I opened in a commercial space. So my goal was, you know, to become known in the community, to grow quickly. And at the time we had just kind of moved back to the community, and we were just renting a house, and, you know, we didn't want to buy a house at the same time as building a studio. So I liked having the commercial space. I got lucky and had a space that was right behind Dairy Queen. I mean, how's that for marketing, you know? So, but really, like when I look back over the past, 14 years or so, I feel like there's three big picture things that have evolved. Like, kind of want to narrow it down. So one is lesson offering formats. The second way it's evolved is the way that I schedule group classes. And then the third thing is just dabbling in some other things kind of outside of just my regular lesson routine. And some of those dabblings don't necessarily always affect students in their regular lesson week. So I'll go into a little more details here. So first of all, the lesson offering formats, I initially started trying out like group classes. So beginners doing group classes, same age kids, open format, no headphones or anything like that. And I think I did a few of those, but then found that it was tricky. You know, it's tricky scheduling those sometimes and getting people coming in at the same time and starting lessons at the same time. And I enjoyed getting that experience. At the same time, I was doing 30-minute private lessons, you know, so sometimes older kids, I would just start them in a 30-minute private lesson. And I did a music lab too. So they rotated 30 minutes lab, 30 minutes lesson.
Okay.
And they would flip-flop with another student, right? And then eventually I kind of stopped doing those beginner classes for kids, and I, moved out of the 30-30 into private simultaneous group classes. So this is like maybe, 9 years into my studio. I started doing actual group class formats with headphones where I would rotate between the students and had like maybe three at a time for 75 minutes. So that was a big evolution in my formats. And now I'm at a point like that kind of got dropped after COVID and I decided to not go back to it. And now I'm at everybody doing a 40-minute lesson. So basically lesson offering formats, kind of four big picture things. I feel like I started with group classes and then I did like a 30-30 lab time, the private simultaneous. And then now I'm at 40 minutes just flat for everybody.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And a couple things that jump out at me that seem backwards or opposite from maybe other teachers' experiences. First of all, you started in a commercial space. So a lot of, you know, I know a lot of teachers start in their home because it's easy. You don't have to rent anything out, you know, and then gradually grow from there. So you started there and then ended up in your home. And then the other thing is, I know a lot of teachers start with private lessons and then get into groups later. So, Right. Yeah, I think that's interesting. You started with the groups. Huh.
That's an interesting point. I really hadn't thought about that, Clinton. I think that some of that, like I said, you know, I didn't want to bring people into like our rental home. It was kind of a small house. I didn't really have an ideal situation initially. And I wanted to try to build quickly. So it was kind of part of my like marketing mindset of like getting myself out there and being more visible. And then I think part of the reason I started with group classes was coming out of my master's degree. You know, we had experiences in teaching group classes with kids through some of our programs at the university. And also recreational music making was really big at the time. And, you know, and that's actually one of the things that I dabbled in, my dabbled in list was RMM classes for adults. And, you know, I bought four keyboards. I had a Clavinova with all the different sounds on it, you know, and I did the Deborah Perez, you know, musical moments, all that kind of stuff. Because I feel like the RMM stuff was like really being pushed and was becoming more well known. This was like around 2010-ish, you know. And so, and I had a lot of adults that I knew, like from our church and from the community that I knew were excited. It's like, great, I've got a great starting point. And I did that for like 2 or 3 years, had some really successful classes, and then it just kind of fell off a little bit. And so at that point, that there's another evolution here of dabbling in, I kind of went away from the RMM and I realized I didn't super love it myself. Like it wasn't my favorite thing. And I was getting a lot of inquiries for preschool, like kiddos. And I never really taught like 3 to 5 year olds. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to dabble in preschool lessons. And I tried both group formats with 2 or 3 kids and private lessons with 4 year olds, you know. And, you know, that's evolved. Two other things I dabbled in were ukulele lessons and also like summer boot camps for teens in the summertime, where it wasn't necessarily expected they would continue all year. It was just like, hey, you want to try out the piano? Here's a boot camp class for teachers. So, yeah. So that's kind of how I got into some of that group teaching and why I was in the commercial space. And yeah.
Right. And then what was it that stimulated the change to just the 40-minute private lessons?
So that, I think that was coming out of the group class format where I was doing like the, what I call simultaneous private lessons.
Yeah.
Where kids are on headphones and you rotate between them. And I liked that for a while, like, okay, this is innovative. This is like a way that I could, you know, make more income and have more kids coming and work less. But also I was on headphones all day, I felt like, and it just kind of got old. And then again, COVID happened. And so we just totally dropped it. And when we came back to it, I just thought it was one of those things. I'm like, yeah, I tried it. I like my private lessons, but I'm tired of like trying to force everything into 30 minutes. And the music lab thing was kind of fading out. Like, I didn't feel like kids were as interested in technology. Like it wasn't the new thing. Like it was again, back in like 2010, where it's like, you gotta be techie. You gotta do this stuff to get kids, you know, interested in piano, the extras. And I kind of felt like my students were kind of weary of it as well. And it was just time for a change. So I thought, you know what, I'm looking for simplicity. I'm looking for like more streamlined approach to scheduling. And so I'm going to go with a 40-minute lesson. And that's what I did.
Yeah. And just as far as scheduling logistics, I know a lot of teachers do 30 minute or 45. So 40, do you do them back to back? Is there time in between? How does that work?
I do them back to back.
Okay.
Yeah. I've thought about leaving time between lessons sometimes, but you know, they show up a few minutes early or whatever. And I find it's nice to just boom, 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 boom. I try to make notes during my lesson time, so I don't feel like I need, you know, time in between to process necessarily. And yeah, the 40 minutes is so easy to schedule. Like you have a set time and it's easy to remember. Like every day I have lessons at 3:20, 4 o'clock, 4:40, 5:20, you know,
right.
Nice and simple.
Yeah. I've never tried 40. I've tried 30. 30 is way too short.
It is so short.
And 45 is nice. And I have some students that are 60, but yeah, I mean.
My high school teacher, when I was in high school, she did 40 minute lessons, 1999, the late 90s, she was doing 40 minute lessons. And I remember her when I first started teaching saying, oh, you should do 40 minutes. And at first I was like, no, that's too an odd of a time. Like come at, you know, leave at 4:20. I thought that was weird, but I thought in hindsight, she was right actually, because 45 minutes is a little too long for like some of your beginners. I feel like, but I don't know. It's amazing what the difference in 5 minutes can do. Like I'm fine with 40 minutes with beginners. And I feel like there's extra time to do some of those extra things you don't always have time to do. And to just really get good practice time with them so that they're really solid on their pieces. You know, it just gives more flexibility and it's still good for intermediate students. You know, they have to really be approaching that late intermediate stage to need to be like moved to 60 minute lessons. So it's a nice balance.
Right. Yeah. And the time being quote unquote weird, it doesn't really, I mean, these days things happen at all kinds of times. So who cares if it's 3:50 or.
Yeah. That was one of those things like, I made it an issue or thought it was an issue and it really wasn't, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about the lesson offering formats and how that evolved. And then you mentioned group class scheduling.
Yes. So let's talk about that. I definitely tried a lot of different things as far as how to run, not just like how to run my classes, but just the scheduling formats. And I think I'm trying to remember in the early days, what I was doing was they had a lesson every week and then they had a group class on top of that, the first week of the month. And it was set like, okay, this class is Mondays at 7:30, the first week of the month. The, you know, level two is Tuesdays, Wednesdays. So everybody was kind of already assigned to a set day and they knew that they might have a lesson on Monday and then Monday night they would have a group class. So I did that like the first year or two. And I think what I found with that was after teaching a full week or a full load of lessons, then I was like extending my day by doing group classes one evening a week for an entire week of the month was too much. So I attended a workshop by, I think it was Charlene Shelsey, you know, TCW Resources. Charlene. Yeah. Charlene Shelsey. And she talked about doing group classes in lieu of the lesson. And I thought, oh, okay. And the great thing about that I've really enjoyed is that I felt like every 6 to 8 weeks, it kind of just gave me a change of pace for the week. Like a little bit of a breather. You're not in that normal routine. It gave me time to do other things like maybe projects or things I wanted to design. And then the kids would come for a 75 minute class. Usually I was like, I liked 3 to 4 kiddos at the same time. 5 to 6 almost got to be too much sometimes to do games and manage, you know, people. I felt like 3 to 4 was a nice number for me. So I did that for quite a bit of time. Initially I would like schedule them at the beginning of the year and say, okay, every time you have a group class, it's going to be at this time. Like your class on group class weeks will always be on Tuesday at 7 o'clock, which is good for consistency. But then as I went away from having like 30 to 40 people in my studio and I'm getting to more of a place where I'm 20, but teaching everyone longer lessons. It just felt like people's lives change so much. Like schedules change so much during the year. I, 2 years ago, I think started just texting people like the week before and saying, hey, you know, we got group class coming up next week. Just let me know what's your rough availability. Like, this probably freaks a lot of people out to hear that I do it like this. I know I can see your face, Clinton. You're like, oh my. I would say an example like, okay, you know, let me know your availability as in Monday, 3 o'clock or later, Tuesday, not at all, Wednesday between 5:30 and 7:30, or, you know, like I tried to tell them exactly how I wanted them to tell me their availability.
Right.
And then I just sat down once I got everybody's in and I would just make, you know, get a spreadsheet. I would just put in who's available, what times. And honestly, it wasn't that bad. Like usually I could easily find a time that everybody, you know, could come that worked for them.
And were you taking their age or level into account or just the availability?
Yeah, I did like having the same levels because a lot of stuff I do in group class is a lot of games that are based on, you know, theory concept levels and reinforcing that. So I did usually try to keep it to level based teaching.
Well, and the main reason that I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that. So in my studio, there's several teachers, you know, we have right now about 75 students. So yeah, I don't want to do that with 75 students, but, and not to interrupt your flow, but I wanted to say that I do that too. We do the periodic group classes about every 6 to 8 weeks in lieu of the private lessons. And I love that. And like you said, it makes it, you know, just different change of pace. And yeah, it's great. But the way we do it is pretty much it is a set time for the whole year. But because we have more students, some of them, there's two options. You know, so like group one, which is age like 6 to 9 or something, it's like Monday at 5 or Thursday at 7, right? So they can come to one or the other, or sometimes they can come to both, or just don't come if they don't want to. But it makes it a little bit easier because if their schedule is weird, you know, they can, and sometimes they can switch. So someone might tell me, oh, we can't come to any, you know, like say they're in group three, we can't come to that one. And I say, okay, well, you could bump up or down a level if you want. You group two is Tuesday or group, you know.
So yeah.
It works just to have them set. And then if they need to change, they can.
But yeah, that's nice. And I think it definitely depends on, like you said, what your studio looks like. The size, like how many teachers. It totally varies how you're going to do something like this. And actually, this coming year, I just felt like doing something a little bit different, like trying to simplify. And I'm kind of surprised at myself at this, but I'm actually going to go back to like just a lesson every week, no group class in lieu of the lesson. And I'm just going to offer some bonus group classes throughout the year that are going to be multi-level. And I just said in my policies, it'll be like between 4 and 10 classes. So it's not like I'm tied to, you know, certain ones every month or anything, but I'm going to experiment, you know, this is all about experimenting. And if I don't like it, we can go back, you know, that's how I see it. It's my business, my studio. And yeah, so I'm going to do this year more of a multi-level experience and call it more of a performance and musicianship class where they come, they perform. We do like a lot of oral training skills, stuff that I know you've seen me do videos online of like echo patterns and singing and moving and singing harmonies. So trying to do that in more of a multi-level thing rather than trying to change the schedule, you know, every 6 weeks and have a different lesson time and do those same level classes. So it's a big change. Like I said, I've been doing this for so long and I do love having that break, but this year I just kind of felt like shaking it up.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Is the main reason just to try something different and shake it up and not
it kind of is
some
yeah
kind of
I just
problem.
I, two things I think. One, I just kind of got a little bit bored of doing the group classes and, you know, scheduling them every 6 weeks and, you know, and I kind of felt like sometimes I feel like, and I'm curious if you experience this, when the kids don't have a lesson, you know, 1 week, they're a little less apt to practice as consistently as they might have if they had a lesson each week. So I kind of feel like sometimes, oh, we lose a little bit of momentum when we have those group classes. I don't know. Do you experience that at all with your students?
A little bit. It kind of depends on the student. But yeah, our group classes, are sort of a mix of a bunch of things, including performance as well. You know, like they take turns playing for each other. So in a way, they're motivated for that. Like several of them, like, oh, I'm going to play for group class. So some of them practice a little bit
more. So practice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see, you know.
Yeah.
I know my husband was like, are you sure you want to do that? You know, you like having the break every 6 weeks. I'm like, well, I don't know. We'll see.
Are you just curious? Are you like changing your pricing or anything or based on that or?
Not necessarily. You know? Not necessarily. I mean, technically, you know, they're going to get 6 more lessons, you know, technically. And then the group classes, I'm just kind of looking at them as bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
But I am actually changing my structure a little bit. Like I've always done an annual, like they can either pay an annual fee for like August through May, like the school year term, or they can make 9 payments. And then I let summer be optional. And I was inspired by actually another teacher, you know, Daniel Light, you probably know Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
He does more of a year round thing. And that's what I'm moving to a flat monthly rate. The studio calendar is going to run from June 1st through May, and their monthly tuition is going to include 4 lessons in June and July, and then approximately 33 weeks from August to May. And I always use the word approximately because,
yes,
and I know you're a big proponent of this too, Clinton. Like,
yes.
I do not like that cut and dry. Well, you owe us an extra, like,
right.
It's not a very good life balance to me to, you know, be having to be counting weeks and, you know, yes. So I'm just trying to like, maybe try to make a little more year round type of idea and
mm-hmm.
not give them the option to take summer off, kind of in the hopes that, one, it will help make a little more consistent income for me, although that wasn't like the major factor. 2, I don't have to bill people. Like they're going to go on coin hops, flat monthly, automatic payment. And then once they're on, they just payments will come out automatically every month until they leave lessons. You know, there's no changes. There's no like, stopping and starting payments or collecting, you know, registration fees anymore.
Yes, it's so great. In fact, like I got goosebumps when you said that. I'm such a nerd because I love the feeling of just flat monthly payment that's automatic. I don't have to think about it. They don't have to think about it. It's all year round. And similar to what you were talking about, at my studio, they get 6 lessons in the summer, which is like 11 weeks, June to August something. And so it's fewer lessons in the summer, but it's all figured in, you know, there's more lessons in April there, you know, it's all, but basically, and clients get it, you know, when I just explain it simply, you pay a flat monthly fee. It's like a membership fee and includes the lessons, the group classes and everything.
Yes.
And just look at the calendar and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's simplicity.
I don't even say it's approximately 32 lessons during the school year. I don't even say that number. I just say, look at the calendar, you know, weekly lessons, see calendar, and then 6 lessons in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's creating more of a salary mindset for us as teachers. It also gives maybe a little more consistency for students, like that they're going to have lessons year round, but there's still a little bit of a breather in there. Right. And I tell people, if anybody ever questions, I say, well, you're not actually paying anything on the weeks that you're not actually coming. This is like an annual package, kind of a deal that you're just making payments on. Right. So if they say, well, I'm only getting 2 lessons in June. Well, okay. Well, you're not really paying for those. You're just now making payments on something that you might be getting in October when you get 5 lessons, you know? Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. I always say, well, if you want to pay less in June, that's fine. But are you going to pay more in October, you know? So,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. Instead of being 150, 200, 250, 200, 150, you know, just make it 200. People seem to get that.
Easy.
Yeah. So I'm curious with these changes that you've made, how well they were received by your students and clients. Is it mostly fine? Was there resistance? How did that go?
I feel like I've been really fortunate. And I think some of it is just cultural expectations. Like, I've set the expectation within my studio that things are never the same. Like, there's always tweaks going on. There's always updates for the following year. I tell my families up front when they register, I like trying new things. What, you know, lessons look like this year, it might be slightly different next year. And I have a blank statement in there, you know? So I think that's really big. And honestly, kind of a reason why I think it's good for us to evolve our studios. Like, that way it doesn't have to feel like such a big deal when you're trying to make a change. Like, so I feel like I've never really had a ton of resistance. One of the important factors, I think, in that is making sure that you communicate well why the changes are happening. And even more so why they're happening for you, but why those changes are happening for your students. Like, mm-hmm. for example, like with what I'm moving to with the year-round payment format and not accepting annual payments at all, you know, I say this is about simplifying. You know, we're not going to have any schedule changes for group classes. You're going to, you know, be on a flat monthly tuition. There's no going to be like making registration payments in May or, you know, getting invoiced in August for annual fees. And, you know, as far as this year goes, like, your student won't have such a stop and start feeling. Like, if you never did summer lessons before, now they're going to touch base with me a few times through the summer. And we're not going to have that backslide that takes us like a month to get back into lessons and get things going, you know, in the fall time. So just trying to highlight those benefits to the client and why this is a good thing that you feel like for them, they're going to see benefits from. So I think that's really important. Don't approach it like being on the defensive. Like, yes. Don't go into it assuming that people are going to be upset, you know, or like defensive mode. Well, that's just not a good way to approach it. So,
right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Those are really good points. And, you know, for you to be confident and excited about it, you know, like, hey, we're doing this now. We're going to have this kind of group class. And those are the best sort of changes, I think, are the ones that make it better and or easier for everybody, right? Your
yeah,
students, the parents, you. Those are just, yeah, awesome. I'm pleasantly surprised, but actually I shouldn't be surprised, that it seems like a lot of these changes for you, they weren't coming out of like some kind of problem or you were afraid of losing students or fear or worry. They were actually just, I don't know how to say it, just always just wanting to improve and explore, like, oh, I
exactly.
Let's try this. Yeah. And so that's really good, because one of the things I was going to ask you was, were you afraid or worried or what problems started these changes? But really, that's
yeah,
not it
well,
at all.
I mean, I feel like in the early days, you know, some of the changes, it wasn't that it was issues, but like I mentioned earlier, like I did the RMM classes for a couple of years and I kind of realized, wasn't my favorite and I wasn't getting a ton of signups. So I didn't keep pursuing that. And I decided to turn my focus, you know, to preschool lessons, because that's where the demand was kind of coming from. And I wanted to learn more about how to teach preschoolers better. So some of it was just like meeting clients where they were at and like what was coming at me. And sometimes it was a matter of like, I'm bored with this. Let's do something different. Like, I'm ready to change it up. And that's just my natural personality anyway, to do things differently and to try new things. So.
Right. And that's a little bit of how I started doing the group classes. I was getting bored in the summer. Well, sort of in general, but hey, let's do something different in the summer because it's different, you know, it's summer. So we had some group classes in the summer. And then a bunch of my students were like, when's the next group class? That was fun, wasn't it? And then I thought, well, we were only doing it in the summer, but let's do it every now and then. So then we just started doing that. Yeah.
And so you listen to your kids. I mean, mm-hmm. You noticed that they were enjoying that and yeah, took it from there.
Yeah. So what would you say to teachers who maybe are thinking about a change, or maybe they're not thinking about a change? Should they think about a change? I don't know.
Well, I would say, first of all, if you're thinking about it, change, ask yourself why. Like, just pay attention to what it is that you're noticing. Like, is it something personal? Is it like, I'm overwhelmed with this schedule and I need to find a way of being more efficient with my time? Is it that, you know, I need to make a change because I need to make a better income? Is it curiosity? Is it just like you said, I'm kind of bored, but I just want to do something different, change it up. So definitely pay attention to what you're feeling and where that's coming from. And also what just doesn't feel exciting anymore. Like at one point, like I said, I kind of noticed that my students were indirectly communicating to me that the music lab time didn't excite them as much as it used to, you know? That's how to me that you evolve with the times and with what society is and how families are changing and also how our lives change. Like sometimes it's about growing your studio. Sometimes it's about cutting it back just for having a better life blend, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It's your business. You can do whatever you want with it.
Right. I know. It's such a great feeling. I was going to ask you about the ukulele too. You said that was another one of your dabbling into other things.
Yeah. So that was an interesting start. Like that was not my idea at all. That was actually one of my current piano students. She was, I don't know, 7 or 8. Her mom had gotten her a ukulele for her birthday. And her mom just texted me in the summertime and was like, look at Lexi with her ukulele. You know, do you know anybody that gives lessons? And at the time, I was actually in Chicago at a Gimmel conference, the Gordon Institute, and I had just attended a session on doing music learning theory inspired ukulele classes. I mean, the timing was crazy. Oh. And I was like, well, I don't play ukulele, but surely I could learn. I'm a musician, you know? And so I could have just passed her off to Sweetwater and told her to drive to Fort Wayne, 45 minutes away, to get ukulele lessons. But the entrepreneurial mindset told me, no, like this is an opportunity. And so I was like, well, I was just open and said, hey, I don't play the ukulele, but I would love to learn alongside your daughter. Are you interested in that? You know, and just said, hey, I'm going to be new to it. And she was thrilled, you know, and then it became a thing like for 2 or 3 years, like I did ukulele classes. I even opened it up to people in the community that like weren't in my studio. I didn't have a ton, but I had a few. And then I even just did some private lessons as well. So that's just one of the things of just like paying attention,
right?
You know, like paying attention to like people asking for certain things. Is there a way that you could like meet demand that maybe isn't something that you would have thought of yourself? And to me, that's being entrepreneurial and being savvy, you know, with your business.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Well, Amy, we're getting close to wrapping up. Is there anything else you wanted to say about evolving your studio and or tell us about where we can find out more about you and your podcast and all that?
Yeah. You know, if you're a little bit unsure of what to do, if you're afraid to make changes, one of my pieces of advice would be to go to someone trusted, whether that just be another teacher friend to run ideas by or even a trusted client. Like I have a lot of clients that have been with me for a long time that I feel like I could go to and say, hey, you know, this is kind of what I'm thinking. What are your thoughts on this? Do you feel like this would be a welcome thing? How do you feel about it? And then when you go to make the change, like just be upfront with your families about it and say, hey, I'm trying something new. You know, I'm excited about this for these reasons. And, you know, if it doesn't work, then we're just going to move on from there. And yeah, so don't be afraid. That's my motto.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And tell us about your podcast and everything, if you're doing presentations or whatever.
Yeah. As we said, I've got the Piano Pantry podcast. It's pianopantry.com/podcast. And 119 episodes in, my kind of overall vibe is living the independent teacher life. Talk a lot about, you know, creative marketing and business stuff, studio related things, and just the work-life blend, rethinking things and how to manage your studio. It's primarily a solo podcast, but I do have conversations every 5 or 10 episodes with teachers, which is a nice way to change it up. Again, I like to change things a bit.
Right.
There's also the Piano Pantry blog. I'm on Instagram at Piano Pantry Amy, and of course on Facebook as well. I do speaking sessions for teachers, just like Clinton. You can go to pianopantry.com/speaking to see a list of all my sessions, including a session that's all about this topic called evolutionary entrepreneurialism. I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Amy. And yeah, to tell the audience, be sure to check out Amy's podcast and everything she does, because it's just excellent. I highly recommend her. I know anytime I'm at a conference and I see her on the program, I'm going to bolt to her session because it's going to be amazing. So thank you.
That's awesome. All you Thanks, do. Clinton. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. All right. Well, take care, everybody. And make sure you subscribe at thepianosenseiway.com. And remember, we're on YouTube too. That's also The Piano Sensei Way. Bye-bye.
Bye.